powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, Jake and I were just talking about Rashad Penny potentially coming back this week, and I was getting questions about D. Eskridge. What's the latest with him? Well, here to answer that question and more is Bob Condotta, Seahawks reporter for the Seattle Times. He joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Bob.
Hey, guys. Hey, how you doing?
Good. I'm going to start with the D. Eskridge question, and I know that the answer's up in the air, but what's the latest you've heard on Eskridge?
Well, he's on injured reserve, so he could, I guess, come back this week. I'm trying to remember exactly when they did it. They did it right before the Rams game. So he actually has to sit out this week by rule. So he can't come back this week. So he can't practice or do anything. So there wouldn't be much of an update this week at all. So next week is when they could put him. They could bring him up off of off IR, and he could return to practice, and he could practice for 21 days, and then they have to make a decision one way or the other on whether he comes back to play or has to stay on IR. So the next week would be the time when you start to maybe hear a little bit about him and hope he could return to practice. So you'd probably hear something next Monday or Tuesday or something like that if he was able to return to practice.
Bob, just
or Tuesday or Wednesday, actually. With the Monday game, everything will be pushed back a day.
Just a few more injury update questions for you. Out of everything that Pete said, what was the most positive news that you could take away from Pete Carroll in regards to, you know, a number of different guys that were either banged up or seriously injured in this past game?
Sure. Well, I guess it turns out nobody really got seriously injured, because it doesn't sound like anything really bad happened with Daryl Taylor. You know, it sounds like that looked bad because they took a lot of precautions, which is what they should do. And, you know, the good and the bad, I guess, is that taking extreme precaution can make something in the moment seem like it's really serious. And in this case, luckily, fortunately, it was not. You know, Pete just said yesterday it might just kind of be a shoulder thing, like maybe it's, you know, I don't even know. He didn't even say what specific shoulder thing it might be, but he said it might even be more of a shoulder than the next thing, but, you know, didn't rule out that he might be able to play this week. So, you know, sounds like that's, you know, as bad as it looked, it's really not a serious thing. Alex Collins, you know, wasn't able to play in the overtime session and had a couple different things going on, but especially with having the extra day, you know, with the Monday night game and, you know, a couple days off here to start the week where they won't be doing anything physically. You know, he made it sound like there's a chance he'll get back. And Damian Lewis is the one we didn't hear a whole lot about in terms of the specifics there. He had a shoulder issue of some sort. You know, the good news there is DeMarco Jones is a pretty experienced guy now. You know, he's played quite a bit now, and so he's sort of the guy who can slide in there, as we saw in the second half. He seemed to play pretty well in the second half of that game other than the holding penalties.
Hey, Bob, earlier Jake and earlier Jake and I were talking about the pass rush and Daryl Taylor, and we were kind of both talking about before any of us knew the severity of Daryl Taylor's injury, because once you see the stretcher come out, once you see everything happening, you don't think about the team. You just hope he's okay, obviously. But immediately when he went down, just the few seconds after that, and you think, okay, maybe it's a knee, maybe he just, you know, hurt his arm or whatever, I thought, oh no, that's going to be a hit to the pass rush. I never thought that I would be thinking that about essentially a first-year player in a group that had Carlos Dunlap and was bringing back so many guys from last year, but we just haven't seen a lot from the veterans on here. I mean, what do you think has been the issue with that group?
Yeah, you're right. We haven't. And, you know, Pete yesterday really sort of laid it quite a bit on the way Pittsburgh plays, how quickly to get the ball out. And there is some truth in that. You know, if you go look at Roethlisberger's numbers, the time to throw and, you know, the yards, air yards and stuff like that, they weren't trying. You know, that is what Pittsburgh's become. That's sort of the theme in Pittsburgh, you know, is how they're really accommodating the offense to fit at age 39, what he could do now, which isn't what he used to be able to do. And it is kind of just, you know, getting rid of the ball real quickly. And you know, they didn't have Juju Smith-Schuster the other night either. So, you know, the receiving core is a little bit different. So a lot of dump offs to running backs and tight ends and, you know, short passes to receivers and stuff like that, which does make it hard to get sacks. But that said, you know, the Seahawks still need to get a more consistent pass rush, I think, out of their guys there. And that's going to be an issue, I think, until it's not. You know, with Dunlap, is it just, you know, a year older and starting, and, you know, and that's starting to take a toll? Is it just not being put in as many good positions last year to, or at this year as he was last year to make the sacks? You know, certainly you do need to start seeing some more stuff from those guys just in general. And you're right, Daryl Taylor has been the one guy. He had a couple of nice pass rushes early in the game the other day too, almost got the Roethlisberger at least once there. But yeah, it's something that under, you know, just definitely is going to have to get better. And, you know, think what you want, I guess, of Jameis Winston. Obviously, he's had kind of an erratic career, but if given time, any good NFL quarterback can throw for a lot of yards. And, you know, Jameis Winston had one of his best games here a couple of years ago, obviously with a different team. But, you know, he's capable on any day of throwing up and throwing for 300, 400 yards if you give him time. So they're going to have to avoid that Monday.
It's a great point, Bob. And one of the other things that has been really interesting that has come under fire is the usage of Jamal Adams compared to last year and this year. And this last game, they put him more down towards the line of scrimmage, and they had good results with it. They've done a couple times here, Bob, this season. They've done a couple different things strategically. They seem to be going more on a week-to-week basis. So do you take that move, that decision, to move him more down at the line of scrimmage as just, hey, this is this week's matchup, and this is what we think is going to help us this week? Or do you see that being more of the story of how they use Jamal Adams moving forward this season?
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point, because that's so we never, you know, during the Legion of Boom era, they never did that. They just, from like 2012 to 2017, they basically just were able to roll out the same 11 guys and play defense the exact same way every week. And they didn't have to do a lot of game planning for opponent. It's sort of, you know, a measure of where they are as a defense that I think they feel like they have to do a lot more of that now. You know, they don't necessarily they're not just necessarily just better on defense than the other offense. And they've got to try to figure out ways to combat things the offense does by moving different pieces around. You know, really we've seen them do that, I think, a lot more the last 2 years, really, with some things they've done. But, you know, a couple of weeks ago, the dime package against the 49ers and things like that. You know, the thing we saw the other night was the usage of seven defensive backs for a time. And they basically, in that package, were just treating Jamal as a linebacker, essentially, and bringing in two other, you know, having six DBs out there otherwise, and just kind of categorizing Jamal as a linebacker and letting him play in that way. And it did seem to work a little bit at times. It felt to me like in the second half they went back to just kind of playing a little bit more just kind of basic base defense kind of things after those two series where the Steelers scored touchdowns. And I don't think Jamal rushed quite as much in the second half as he did in the first half. I think they were trying to kind of curtail the big plays a little bit. But I do think it's going to be a little bit week to weekish. I think because of, again, where they are as a defense, they're still trying to sort out their secondary. Who knows? Maybe Trey Brown suddenly becomes the corner or the starter at that other corner spot, you know, as they're still trying to sort out their pieces. I think they are doing much more of looking each week at what they think is going to work best against the opponent they're playing.
There's been so much success over the last decade with the Seahawks team that it's hard to imagine a scenario where either John or Pete end up on the hot seat this year. Do you think that one exists, though?
I mean, I never rule out any hot seat in the NFL, but I think there's some practical realities here. You know, each of them just signed contracts in the last 12 months that keep them with the team for quite a while. Pete's goes through the 2025 season. John's through the draft of 2027. And, you know, I think they have each earned quite a bit of benefit of the doubt here. You know, this is the most successful period in Seahawks history that these two guys have been responsible for. And, you know, if not really from a sustained success standpoint of kind of any of the major professional sports teams, maybe other than the Storm, but, you know, having 10, 11 years of just competing for the playoffs every year, making them most years, you know, that's really hard to do. And, you know, so I'm not of the mind that the one season means throw everybody out and start over. But, you know, this is the NFL, and when guys have been at a place a certain amount of time, certainly, and, you know, if things start to go another way, certainly those questions are inevitable to ask. You know, it's interesting with this season. I mean, this year you got, you know, 17 games, you got 11 more to play, you got an extra playoff spot to play for. I mean, that started last year, but, you know, some of the historical things of, you know, if you start badly, you know, that's a little bit different dynamics just with having one more game and the way the playoff system is now and things like that. So, you know, there's still a lot that can happen here, but certainly, you know, I think they for sure have to win these next two games I don't think you'll want to go into that Green Bay, Arizona to start November, essentially, at anything less than 500.
Yeah, that is the fascinating aspect about this, Bob, when it comes to that conversation. And you know, there's so much season left to play, but these next couple weeks are so critical to kind of determine the outlook of all of those games moving forward. And part of that outlook is the Seahawks running game. And you look at the second half of the Steelers game, and man, that running game came alive. It gave them a chance to get back into the football game. Pete Carroll obviously having some strong words about how he felt it was so important for them to recapture that and to be that type of team moving forward. Do you feel like that is, from Pete Carroll's sentiment, that is strongly during the time that Geno Smith is under quarterback or under center, or do you believe that that's how he feels, you know, that's how they got to play for the rest of the season?
Well, I think it's certainly an emphasis while Geno's the quarterback. And he flat out said that yesterday when he talked to us via Zoom, you know, that as Geno gets his feet back under him, I think was the phrase he used, that they're going to need to make sure they give him as much support as they can. You know, it's interesting. I guess you can ask why it took a half to try to, you know, why you didn't go into the game thinking that, but maybe they saw some things. And obviously there were, right? You know, the Steelers have not been a great defense. It's not really the Steelers' defense of a lot of the past Tomlin years right now. And so I think there was probably some reason to think, yeah, we can do some things against these guys and let's just kind of play. Obviously at halftime, they realized, you know, that with the way the second quarter went, that they were going to have to, you know, if nothing else, just try to keep Pittsburgh's offense off the field for a while. And with those first couple drives, you know, kind of go that route. And then it started to work. And it was pretty amazing how well that worked, you know, just going with the running game like that and immediately moving down the field and getting right back in the game. But yeah, I definitely think they're going to keep going that route for as long as Geno is the guy. And, you know, I do think it's something that if they can really get established, I think they would keep emphasizing that for sure when Russell comes back. But I don't think, you know, obviously they're two different quarterbacks and with, you know, two hugely different resumes at the moment anyway of what they've done. So I think when Russell would come back, I don't know that they'd stick to it quite like that, but I do think that's what they want to do for sure, you know, these next three or four games, however many more Russell has to miss.
You think Trey Brown starts against the Saints?
That's a good question. I mean, Sidney Jones is another guy that has an injury situation, and we don't know exactly how serious that is. So that might be sort of the entree to just make that move and make it sort of seamless there, is if Sidney has any sort of injury and you just kind of start Trey Brown and go that route if he's the healthier player. Certainly he played well it's not like Sidney Jones has been a 5-year starter here or something. And so you have that kind of consideration of a guy, he's only started for a couple games. So I think there's a really good chance he could for sure.
All right. He is Bob Condotta. Make sure to read his work on the Seahawks on the Seattle Times. Thanks so much, Bob.
Okay. Thanks, you guys. All right. Bye.
See ya.
Thanks, Bob.
It's time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Teela Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reports nothing has materialized as of now between the Seahawks and free agent quarterback Cam Newton. What is the real headline?
I'm going to bet it stays that way. I have a hard time seeing Cam Newton sign with a team, be on the field for maybe 2 weeks, and then get benched for a guy that there was a time he played opposite. So I have a hard time seeing that happen. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I mean, Pete Carroll seemed to make a pretty declarative statement about Cam Newton here in this cut right here.
Well, we're doing everything we can with everybody that's available always. And so I talked to him a couple times, you know, and just trying to see what was going on in his world and all that. And we're wide open and continuing to compete with that. And, you know, there was nothing to be done then. And, you know, we're really counting on Geno to do the job. And that's how the conversation went with him, too. We were counting on Geno to do the job and all that. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen next.
If you listen to that and you're like, Jake, that's not a declarative statement. My point exactly. Okay. There's nothing declarative about how serious the Seahawks and Pete Carroll is in terms of bringing in Cam Newton, because they're not. Yes, they're going to have conversations. Yes, they're going to make the phone call. And in a doomsday scenario, maybe they would consider it. But right now, Geno Smith's their backup quarterback. They've paid him. He's been here for years. They know he knows the system better than anybody else out there right now. He's the best guy for the job to fill in for Russell Wilson at the current moment. And there's no reason to hit the panic button and bring in Cam Newton, who doesn't know the system, and trying to go through that mess of trying to get him up to speed and operate this offense at a quarter of its capability. So I don't really think that that's a huge need for them right now. I don't see it happening whatsoever. And in that cut, I know it made the rounds. Pete Carroll, he called Cam Newton. Oh, maybe they're interested. Did that sound declarative to you at all? No, it's just, hey, we talked to everybody, checking on how he's doing. Geno, we're hoping he can get us through the situation, and that's exactly where they're at right now.
And again, it's certainly, we know that Pete Carroll will talk around something. We know that he won't be make a declaration on something, and he can be a little vague. But there have been times when they have had someone in for a workout, or it's gone a little further, and he said it blatantly. Marshawn Lynch comes to mind. Granted, my pet theory is that at the time he was trying to divert attention away from someone else. So it was like, do you want to ask me about Marshawn Lynch? We're bringing him in. He's flying in today. But there have been times when he's been a little more direct when there's legs to a story, and he wasn't in this case.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two. Not a good look last night. Kraken dusted in Dave Hextall's return to the Flyers on Monday night, losing 6-1. What is the real headline?
The good news is that this was never supposed to be a Kraken team whose strength was goaltending and defense. Oh, no.
That's not true at all. That's exactly what they were supposed to be.
You got to be like that, yeah. Stacey.
Come on, Stacey. It's early in the season. It's
People
early
don't
in,
think fr- be like
in this franchise. Come on.
Think back long ago in Kraken history to like three nights ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
They beat the Predators.
That's right.
It can be done.
And look, this wasn't the return. This wasn't the revenge game for Dave Hextall, unfortunately. But this is always going to be tough. And I know that the Vegas Knights made this process look really easy. They also got the benefit of taking the NHL by storm and taking advantage of rules that a lot of teams didn't realize were there, and the loopholes that were there to field a very, very good team from top to bottom. And the Seattle Kraken, although there's high expectations, there's high hopes, there's excitement about what this group can do and ultimately that they can become a playoff team, doesn't mean they're not going to go through their struggles, especially out of the gate. This does not surprise me at all. Do I like seeing 6-1? Heck no. Especially when defense is supposed to be such a defense and goaltending is supposed to be their strength. That's not a positive look whatsoever, but can they grow from it? Can they learn from it? Can they fix these issues quickly? That's what I'm going to be most concerned with. And hopefully, hey, quick turnaround. They've got the New Jersey Devils tonight, and hopefully they can get that win and get some positive momentum building towards their first home opener here in Seattle.
I can't believe that's already here.
Crazy.
The building opens tonight. Foo Fighters concert.
It's going to be surreal being there. There's going to be like celebrities.
Okay, so a little bit behind the scenes here.
Scoop.
Ooh. Well, Curtis Rogers is the one that has the scoop.
Kraken insider, Curtis Rogers.
That's right. But the Vegas Knights operator, the guy that put it all together, the director or whatever, what is his name?
That's right. So the guy who was in charge of putting the Vegas Golden Knights arena like production in place,
yes,
his name's Johnny Greco. He's been hired by the Kraken about a year ago, and he's been in charge of doing that for Climate Pledge Arena. So I would expect a lot of pageantry, a lot of bells and whistles on Saturday night.
Wouldn't it be funny if it was the same thing, though?
Yeah,
like, it's Knights. He's like, I have one thing I do well. I'm sorry.
Screen projection on the ice.
That's right. And I was going to ask. So they have their little, like, King's Court there in the arena. What are they going to build for a Kraken? Is it
ship?
A ship with sailors on it,
ooh,
right? Like, what's going to be the Knights? They had a secondary mascot.
One thing I want to know about the
Kraken is they don't have like a furry little mascot yet.
You don't need one. I think the secondary mascot should also be a creature of the sea.
I don't know.
How does it make sense if your main Kraken is a mascot and your side mascot
is a chipmunk?
How does it
make sense that a Gila monster is your secondary mascot when you're named the Knight?
Well, both are mythical creatures.
I kind of hope the Kraken have a chipmunk mascot. That'd be a little
That doesn't make any sense.
I would assume that if you talk about
a monster,
I feel like the secondary mascot is going to be maybe like a little octopus or a squid or a fish.
That's already your mascot.
What about the secondary mascot is a mermaid?
No, you need it to be like a pirate,
a
sailor of some kind.
Headline rewrites.
We're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to have the inside scoop on this before everything opens for the home opener.
I wonder if people will
That is our promise. That is the investigative journalism that we will be doing on this show.
I wonder if people will throw octopus legs onto the ice.
They do that in Detroit already.
Well, that's what I'm wondering if people
You can't steal somebody else's thing.
Well, don't tell that to the Dodgers, who stole something that the Mariners stole, and it made much more sense for the Mariners when they stole it.
Well, speaking of stealing things, the Red Sox and Astros in the ALCS. Boston taking a 2-1 lead last night after blowing out Houston. What's the real headline?
Everyone outside of Houston now finds themselves rooting for the lesser of two evils.
100%. I am proud of it, too. Go Red Sox. And I love that they are just burying them in these wins. I hope it continues. I hope that they beat them 3-1 and they embarrass them. That's all I want. Just embarrass the Astros. And I don't like the Red Sox. And if the Red Sox go to the World Series, then you know who I hope wins? Who's actually dominating their series right now? The Fighting Freddie Freemans. Go Atlanta Braves. Let's do this. That's who I want to
go
win
Braves,
the World Series. And Stacey, you did not believe that this could happen. You were talking about the matchup of the evil empires, the Astros and the Dodgers. Well, my friend, well, look at where we are now.
I've been a Braves fan for my whole life.
Name three Braves.
Ronald.
That's half of
That's
one,
That's half
yes.
a name, yeah.
Acuna. Yeah. That,
there you go.
Junior.
Yeah.
Three. That's, that counts
that's,
as three
no, that's
three.
One person's name.
Frederick. Frederick Freeman.
Freddie Freeman, yeah.
Sure.
Give us one more.
Okay, that's
I don't
two.
Need to. I don't need to prove
wow.
my fandom
All
to
right.
you.
All
Can
right.
I just, more importantly, I need to tell you guys, I just learned that Gila monsters are real. Is it Gila
yeah.
monster?
Yeah, no, Gila? It's Gila monster. Yeah, Jackson and I loves Gila
what?
Monsters. We learn
Brave
Wilderness on YouTube. We learned
I've
about
I've never
it.
Heard of that animal in my life.
Well,
I thought that it was like Gullah Gullah Island. You guys remember that?
Binya Binya, the
yeah.
polywog.
I thought that's what it was.
No.
No.
No, it's a poisonous lizard thing that lives in the desert.
Where are they?
In Arizona.
They're in Arizona.
In
they're here.
In
they're
Nevada.
Here in Arizona.
They're in the western United States.
Yes. Right? A Gila monster.
And they're not Komodo dragons.
No, they're smaller than Komodo dragons.
But they're still big.
Kinda.
And
yeah.
we're positive they're real animals.
Yes. Stacey, you could do what Jackson and I do. We go to Brave Wilderness on YouTube. We learn all about animals, and you can learn about the Gila monster.
Why didn't I learn about the Gila monster?
I mean, you were too busy, you know, playing floor slava in college and
okay.
dislocating
well,
your elbow.
You were too busy playing with your earthworm diorama.
Oh, no, the compost bin, the worm bin. Oh, that was devastating. All right, taking a look around the NFL next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
I just feel it's important before I take a look around the NFL, Curtis, and talk about the latest in the NFL, that I just stress that I know a lot of animals, okay?
Okay.
I know a lot. I worked at a zoo. Mm-hmm. I watched Zaboomafoo. I watched other animal shows growing up. Yeah. I didn't know about one.
Which
probably
zoo was
not
it?
Woodland Park Zoo. I just didn't know about one not that important animal that I feel like is
well,
easy to overlook.
Don't go that far, because to some people, Gila monsters are very important. So you might be offending, you know, Gila monster fans out
Stacey,
there.
Stacey, as recently as, let's see, there's a picture taken in 2017 of a Gila monster seen at Woodland Park Zoo.
Like in the wild?
Like at the zoo.
Well, that wasn't when I worked there, so we didn't cross paths. The Titans have lost a few players from last night's win over the Bills. Cornerback Caleb Farley suffered a torn ACL. Wide receiver Cameron Batson also suffered a torn ACL. That one on a kick return. Obviously, Titans/Bills tackle. Taylor Lewan was carted off. He's now in concussion protocol. And an interesting one here. Wide receiver Julio Jones is now day-to-day with a hamstring injury. That's after missing 2 weeks with injury.
Mm-hmm.
Hindsight, right? Hindsight is here, but do you still regret as much the Seahawks passing on a trade for him, knowing that he's been banged up with Tennessee?
It was always going to be a tough spot, and quite honestly, I mean, I didn't see the Seahawks pulling the trigger on that one, but I mean, when it comes to Julio Jones, if it would have been at the right price, I would definitely be still interested in that move, and who knows how long this injury is going to hold him out for. If it only holds him out, let's say, 3 games, and he's able to play the rest of the way, still worth taking the player. I mean, if he's there for the majority of your games. But yeah, I mean, Julio Jones, this was a concern. These are the things that you're worried about in terms of the argument against him, is that, you know, the past couple years he has been dealing with injuries, particularly with his hamstring, and that hamstring issue has flared up. I don't know if it's the same one that he was having issues with last year, but that is that was the major concern with Julio Jones, as he was, you know, getting up there in age as a player. His injuries started to become more frequent, and you know, it's crazy that they are winning despite that. Not a surprise that they beat the Jags, but to beat the Bills, the hottest team in the league, 34-31, man, that's a big-time surprise.
The Texans have released veteran defensive lineman Whitney Mercilus. Should the Seahawks take a look?
Yes, 100% they should. I mean, you're not in a position to turn your nose up at anybody right now, and guess what? 31 years old, he gets released from the team, but in 6 games, guess what? What's his production? He has 3 sacks. He has 4 TFLs. I mean, you're telling me that that doesn't sound good to add that to your team, to your roster?
Right.
It sounds pretty good to me, and maybe you could get something out of, you know, Whitney Mercilus, the same way that you were able to get something out of Carlos Dunlap a season ago. So I think that it's something that you should definitely be looking into, and I don't know if they're going to end up making the move or not, but yeah, they should definitely look into it.
We're getting, just to clarify, earlier you mentioned, hey, Geno Atkins is still out there for a reason. I still see like texts and tweets about why haven't the Seahawks added him. I think just given the lack of production on defense, especially in your front seven, you obviously have a different mindset with that, which is like, look, Atkins is out there for a reason.
Yeah, he's out there for a reason and nobody else. I've not heard Geno Atkins' name be linked to any other teams. So what does that mean? That means that the league has a consensus that this player, his injury was significant last year, and he is not the same guy that he once was. And so, I mean, Snacks Harrison. Think of Snacks Harrison, what he did, what his production was. He had multiple teams that were interested in him and vying for his services at this point in the season. You hear zero conversation around Geno Atkins, which is not a good sign.
It's a tough week for Jared Goff. The Detroit Lions still winless with him as their, for now, franchise quarterback. And guess what? He's about to face off against the team that gave him away. The LA Rams and Detroit Lions set to face off. So I'm penciling that in as a win for the Rams right now, unfortunately for Seattle. But what a weird and tough situation for Goff to feel in. Now, I don't feel much sympathy. I mean, it's a job. You didn't do your job, and then you got traded away, and you're not doing your job in Detroit. But Detroit's kind of a place where some careers have gone to die. And we've seen a ton of guys leave Detroit. Matthew Stafford playing opposite Goff in this one, a prime example. Leave Detroit and then find success with other teams. Quandre Diggs, another example with Seattle. So what do you make of this matchup outside of just thinking the Rams will win?
Outside of thinking the Rams will win, it'll be curious to see if Jared Goff can dice this defense up a little bit. He knows it. He's practiced against it, and we'll see if they're able to come up with a game plan where he can be, you know, somewhat successful. The other thing is there going to be a conversation pregame between Jared Goff and Sean McVay? I mean, you know, they spent a lot of good times together. It seems like they have wanted to leave, you know, they want to be remembered for the string of success that they had there with the Rams rather than the divorce. Both sides have expressed that, but is that how they really feel behind the scenes?
Right.
that is always different. And I'll definitely be looking out for that and seeing if there's a genuine interaction between the two. Because if I'm Jared Goff, honestly, I don't think I want to have that genuine interaction with Sean McVay right now. Not at this point. I mean, too soon. Maybe a few years from now. But I'd still be pretty bitter and pretty upset about the way this whole thing went down.
All right, talking about three young quarterbacks right now. One of them bad news, two interesting news. So I'll start with the bad news. Baker Mayfield, at least bad news for the Browns, now has a completely torn labrum in his left shoulder. The team is hoping he can avoid surgery for it right now and continue to play through it. The Browns have a Thursday night game coming up. Now, obviously, I think we'd anticipate that Mayfield at least plays in that game and then they can see how he performs. But a tough start for the Browns, who otherwise were a favorite to come out in the AFC and make some noise.
You know, when you talk about Lamar Jackson, you talk about Kyler Murray, you talk about this
group.
That's
who I was going to talk about next.
Well, these two guys, to me, are guys that as they're fighting for the MVP race, and it is really is sad that it has really only come down to quarterback play, because there are some other guys that deserve some credit for what they're doing this year. Like Cooper Kupp, like Myles Garrett, Trevon Diggs. Like, those three guys in their own right are having amazing years. How about Derrick Henry?
Yeah.
They're 4-2. They just took down the Bills, and Derrick Henry is putting the team on his back. He's putting other defenses completely on his back and carrying the load. I mean, the guy is an absolute monster. So, you know, there's other guys that I believe are deserving of those looks. But Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, obviously being a front runner in these conversations. And when it comes to Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, this is a group that they continue to keep showing that they are a stable program, that Lamar Jackson, when he is on, he is, gosh, he's one of the toughest quarterbacks to face in the league. And we'll see. The big question has been, look, they've been successful in the regular season. Can they get the job done in the postseason? And that's something that Lamar Jackson is going to have to prove to his haters out there. But this is a special player.
All right. Yesterday, we did a glass half full and then a glass half empty approach to Seattle's defense, looking at one big positive and then one negative that needs to change. I'm going to flip the script and do the same thing for the offense. It's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, we went over the good and bad for the Seahawks defense yesterday. Looked at a glass half full, glass half empty situation, depending on how you see the team. Going to do the same with the offense today. So, one good thing, one bad thing. And we ought to have kind of like solutions for the bad thing, or at least like why it needs to change, why you might not be able to get away with it. For Seattle's offense, I'll let you go. Let's did we do negatives first yesterday? Let's go positives first today. Okay. Let's end on a bad note.
All right. Let's sure. You like chaos and pain. Sure, so yeah. Sure. Let's do it.
Yeah. Team chaos. All right. So you get us started with a positive, then I'll share mine.
Okay. All right, so I would say that a positive from this group was that the offensive line really started to control the game in the second half. And against a very good group, against a group of T.J. Watt, Cameron Hayward, who is a war daddy in the middle of the defense for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Devin Bush, who is a talented linebacker, Joe Schobert, who is a veteran linebacker who's very good in the running game, Melvin Ingram, who is a disruptor, a guy who can be dynamic. They really took over that game in the second half, and they didn't just do it, 4 yards in a cloud of dust. I mean, they were opening up huge running lanes for Alex Collins and DJ Dallas and Travis Homer. They did an amazing job in the second half. Part of it is they caught the Steelers off guard in terms of what, you know, Mike Tomlin and that crew and Keith Butler, what they thought they were going to do in the second half. But at some point you got to adjust, and the Steelers never really adusted until late in the game, until overtime. But it was very impressive to see this group work together. This was the best job that offensive line had done in terms of combination blocks, working together in double teams. Just overall, it was very impressive to not where they were moving bodies, but they were opening up massive running lengths.
And that was obviously primarily in the second half where everything kind of came together, because overall, Geno Smith was sacked, I think, 5 times. And I know that sometimes that's going to be your fault as a quarterback. You hang on too long, or you just run backwards out of the pocket when you had some space. And so you don't want to put every single sack all the time on the offensive line. But that being said, I do think the second half was much improved for them. Related, because these two things were working in tandem so well, especially in the third quarter, is the run game. So that's my positive coming out of this game. It goes without saying, but Alex Collins becoming the first running back since Chris Carson in week 15 of 2019 to have 100 or more rushing yards in a game. And it's weird to think that a Pete Carroll offense, it's kind of like thinking how a Pete Carroll defense won't have good secondary play or struggles at corner. It's weird that a Pete Carroll offense struggles to maintain the run, but that's kind of how they've been without Chris Carson. Granted, in 2018, when they really threw themselves into it, they brought in a run blocking right guard. They brought in a blocking tight end, right? They drafted Rashad Penny. It didn't end up working out, but Chris Carson got 1,000 yards that year. I believe they were also the only team in the NFL to have three separate running backs have 100-yard games, which I think was Mike Davis was the third. Obviously, Penny and Carson, the two others. You haven't been able to see that kind of success since. And, you know, there were times in 2018 where you thought, especially that wild card game, where you thought, okay, vary it up a bit. Like, the mm-hmm. run's fine. It works for you. You're getting 160 yards per game. That's fantastic. But, like, if it doesn't work, and if you're running into a brick wall, and if they're preparing to stop you there, then throw it. And there were times when they were just stubborn about that. You've seen not stubbornness about not running the ball, but just not effectiveness about running it of late. And so it was nice to see that work.
Yeah, it was. It was great to see that work. And Stacey, I believe that leads into one of your positives that you had. But you wanted to go negative first. So why don't we do that?
Okay. So mine is related to my negative, which is it was great to see the run game take off. And I think that the run game is obviously an essential part to this team, and it was nice to see it. And I don't think it's a coincidence that when you look at the stats, don't look at the win-loss column because they lost this one, but when you look at the stats between this game and the opener against Indy, there's a lot of the same. Same number of first downs, similar number of rushing yards, et cetera. However, the negative is that I don't know if they can do it again this week, or at least until Carson gets back, because Alex Collins is injured. Now, Pete Carroll said he could be playing. He's not ruled out for this week. He suffered a hip injury, didn't come back in the game.
But all intensive purposes, he may be able to go, and he may be able
to
strap it up, but he might be limited.
Let's say he's limited, so now your run game falls to Rashad Penny, who has never had more, ever, than like 400 and something yards in a season, and that was a career high, and has 8 yards this year.
Right, and I believe his max, want to make sure I'm accurate with this, but, I mean, he has not had a game that I can think of. Maybe it was
he's
one of the Rams games he's had 100 yards, but not a significant workload. Like, the most he's had 10 carries, 12 carries in 2018. Those were the high numbers for him. And then in 2019, his high numbers in carries was 14 and 15. His career high in a game is 15 carries. And that's who you're going to rely on potentially? That's a very scary proposition against a very good physical front seven against the New Orleans Saints.
That completely sums up what I was saying, too. It's perfect. It's that's the final thing about it is what's good, you got the run game going last week. What's bad, you might not be able to get it this week with Rashad Penny, and you're going against a great run defense.
Right. So the consistency aspect of it, that's still in question. You don't know if they can call upon that every single game and for that to be their clear identity. And you know, the other thing that, you know, Curtis, you had pointed to in our show prep is that, and I think this perfectly illustrates it, is that, okay, identity crisis maybe, but if you want this to be your identity, then you got to do everything humanly possible. And you don't know that Russell Wilson's going to get hurt. You don't know Chris Carson's going to get hurt. So, you know, that's not something you're anticipating for. But it just makes it difficult when you didn't invest your assets to become that type of team. In the offseason, in the draft, you know, philosophically, you know, how you want it to be. You're constantly
your scheme,
evolving
everything.
That on the fly. Therefore, you're you're not a true master at one particular thing. And that, and now, you know, week after five games of the season, six games of the season, now you're going to turn around and declare this is who we are and what we're going to be. And that's a very difficult thing to do. I think people underestimate that, but hopefully they can make that happen, because it's going to be something that they have to do. They don't really have a choice right now, given the situation that they're currently in with Russell Wilson being out.
Did you have a negative you want to throw in? Or if it's related to this, we can save it, because we're about to talk about the run game.
I would say that the negative that I have, you know, when it comes offensively, is the fact that when you look at this group, I was really hoping that the passing game would be a little bit more buttoned up than what we saw. And that means from a pass protection standpoint. That means also from, you know, Geno Smith just being able to operate this offense a little bit better in the passing game. He made some nice throws. He had some really nice connections to Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf. He had a wide open Gerald Everett. But I would have liked to have seen, you know, from an intermediate to short pass game standpoint, that, you know, that's the one thing that I believe Geno Smith can do a good job. And I would have liked to have seen that play out better. And obviously they struggled with that in the first half. They really needed the running game to allow Geno Smith to be successful and to be effective in the second half. And that's something that they're going to continue to need to take that pressure off of Geno.
All right, Pete Carroll certainly relishing an opportunity to get back to the offensive identity he wants this team to have in this upcoming game against the Saints. But do they have the weapons to do it? We're going to take a closer look next.